Good evening and welcome to Thursday Night Tailgate, where NFL legends live. Join us tonight as we get more legendary stories from former players and coaches who were in the huddles, on the sidelines, and in the locker room. Plus insights from media members from around the country who have covered the game for decades. Check out our five-star picks of the week with former Patriots Pro Bowl running back Tony Collins. Plus, our spotlight on the positive segment. And here's some good things for a change about what players and teams are doing in their communities. Now, here are your hosts, Chris Mascaro and Bob Lazeri. Go get them, guys.
Well, 2020 got one last shot in. For a year that made us all miserable, it gave us one last parting shot. Now Tom Brady has a 7th Super Bowl title, and Tampa Mayor Jane Castor can officially rename the city Tampa Bay. I never tempt fate by saying things can never get worse, but the only way next season could do it is if the Bucs traded Tom Brady to the Cleveland Browns and they won the Super Bowl. God forbid. Good evening, folks, and welcome to Thursday Night Tailgate, where your favorite NFL legends live. Chris Mascaro and Bob Lazeri here with you. Tonight, we're going to look back at Super Bowl Sunday and what did and did not happen. We're also going to remember the good and the bad times with some guys who know what that plane ride is like when you've lost a Super Bowl and you're flying back home. So stay tuned, folks. We got a great show in store for you tonight. Bob, how are you, my friend?
Hey, how about yourself?
I tell you what, Bob, I know we were talking off air like we typically do prior to the show getting started, but you guys up in New England, you guys can't catch a break. I mean, the winter, it seemed like it was going along all right, and then all of a sudden it has just hit you guys with the 1-2 over and over again. It seems like over at least the last month.
Yeah, New England winters, Chris, it's just a matter of, you know, are you going to spread the bad weather out, or you're going to get hit all at once. And when you get hit all at once, you dig out from one and you get hit from another. And then you have these single-digit evenings, which just kind of encases everything in ice. It's a brutal time, and that's what it's going right now. You know, almost 2 feet of snow over the last 10 days, probably, in certain parts of New England. And we're going into a seven-day stretch here of Arctic temperatures. And it's really, you know, roads are being torn up. I mean, it's this is what you don't read about when you look at nice pictures of New England on Facebook and Twitter, and you don't read about, you know, roads getting torn up and the brutalness that's involved. And the last part of it, Chris, the brutalness is affecting my body right now because I've been shoveling nonstop for 2 weeks. So, you know, give me a break, Mother Nature. I mean, she's been tough over the last year, but Chris, come on, you know, right?
That's right. Give these guys a break, Mother Nature, all right? One time. Come on.
Before we get started, I want to wish our good friend and former co-host Angelo Kane a very happy birthday. Ange, we hope you're having a fantastic day, brother, and today is filled with a lot of things that become great memories for you.
Say, Ange, you know, is a great friend, of course, and it's also my mom's birthday today. I mean, she, as you know, she passed away in 07, Chris, and one of the things I regret in life is that nice people like yourself didn't have a chance to meet her. So happy birthday up above, Mom.
Happy birthday indeed. And yeah, Bob, two of the great missed opportunities in my life was the opportunity to spend some time and meet both your mom and your dad. I know both folks, they certainly raised a great son. And so that's all the evidence you need that they were great parents and great people. So I sure do wish I would have had the opportunity to meet both of them. And certainly happy birthday, Mrs. Lazeri, up in heaven. Bob, I want to start by getting a quick thought from you about the game on Sunday. We'll talk about TV ratings in a bit, and then later on with Tony, we'll get into more about the game itself. But I felt the officials got a little flag happy and called some ticky-tack penalties in the first half, allowed the Bucs to take that big lead before halftime. For the game, the Chiefs had 11 penalties for 120 yards, Bucks only 4 for 39. So a little one-sided. I want to get your thoughts on what you saw.
I think it was a very tiny factor, Chris. I mean, 11 penalties, say it was only 7 or 8. 7 or 8 is still too many penalties in a Super Bowl, and you probably don't deserve to win. But, yeah, I think that was kind of overblown. I mean, the problem was with Kansas City, Chris, and I think I've been maintaining all year long. I think they have an average defense. You know, it was, you know, I mean, this is a team that leads in so many games and is forced to play a certain style of defense. But in a tough game like that, you know, very Green Bay-ish, New Orleans-ish, you know, they'll give up what they have to. But the fact that, and I don't know if you could get these odds in Vegas. We were talking about the odds last week of certain things, but the Chiefs not scoring a touchdown, would anybody have even attempted to bet on that? That to me was amazing. Now, you know, I was on record of picking the Chiefs. I thought that the absence of their two tackles would be something that Andy Reid would work around. And that was what was shocking to me, Chris. They really didn't make adjustments to that. I mean, you know, quick hitters and things like that. And give credit to Tampa Bay's secondary. That had partly to do it, but I still think Chiefs could have done a much better job, you know, handling the fact that they were going, you knew they were going to get pressured from the outside. They really, and even at halftime when they were down 21-6, still in the game for Kansas City, obviously, but they did not make the adjustments I thought that were necessary. And amazing to me is that Arians outcoached Andy Reid big time in that game. Did not see a lot of this coming. I mean, it was shocking in many ways. You know, for Mahomes to have 23 incompletions in a game like that. And Mahomes, for all that he is good, and he's a great player, Chris, as we know, one of the problems with him is when he is backpedaling, and I know he was not 100%, had toe surgery yesterday, Chris. He did not look well. He looked gimpy going into the game to me. But he also, when he backpedals, you know, people say he's elusive in the pocket. He goes totally, totally vertical. So for him to make gainers on when he's going backwards, it's never a good thing. He's got to get into the habit of going side to side and doing kind of a Russell Wilson type thing. But when he backpedals, I mean, he can go back 30 yards like it's nothing. And then just to reach the line of scrimmage is tough. But all this said, Chris, give credit to Todd Bowles. We've talked about guys like him in the past who are definitely coordinators and not head coaches, but they do what they do very well. They stuck to the game plan. Let's put pressure on Mahomes. Give Kelce his numbers, and he got his numbers, which we all said, double-digit receptions, but keep him in front of the goal line. And they did that. They worked it to a T. Brady was good, not fabulous, but Brady did what he had to do. He didn't make mistakes. It was the Tampa defense that won the Super Bowl. And as you say all the time, Chris, defense will win championships.
100%. Could not agree more, my friend.
All right, on to tonight's show. Our first guest is going to be former Steelers and Jaguars Pro Bowl tackle Leon Searcy. Leon's been a great friend of the show going all the way back to March 15th of 2012, so almost 9 years now. We've been meeting with Leon. Leon's a great guy, tells great stories. And if you're a fan of the ESPN 30 for 30 series, you're going to find Leon's in two of the episodes. One about his alma mater, the University of Miami. The U is the name of the that episode. And then the other one is the episode titled Broke. So some up and downs, but the arrow is certainly pointing up for Leon right now. He's just written an autobiography titled Fourth Down and Damn. Really looking forward to catching up with Leon tonight, Bob.
Yeah, he was, like you said, a good friend, Chris. He's joined us on the TV side up here in New England. And every time we talk to him, you know, we learn a lot about the offensive line position. He's a guy that played 8 years, very seldom missed a game, and has some great stories to tell. So we're glad to have him back.
Yes, we are. He'll join us about 10 minutes from now. Following him, as always, Tony Collins will join us. We'll go back over our Super Bowl picks and determine who won our prognostication championship. Bob, I may need a ruling from you. So we'll talk through that when Tony joins us about 30 minutes from now. Later on in the hour, we're going to be joined by former Steelers safety Lee Flowers. Lee's going to be making his TNT debut with us tonight. Really looking forward to hearing about his college days right here in Atlanta at Georgia Tech, plus how he earned his way into the Steelers starting lineup in that 90s defense, Bob. So many of our great friends, right? Greg Lloyd, Lavon Kirkland, Chad Brown, Randy Fuller. Plus, you know, other greats like Woodson and Carnell Lake. We could go on and on.
It should be a really great segment with Lee Tynan.
And I know he's one of those guys that you love, Chris, a lifetime Steeler. And there's a few of them, and they're all friends of the show. And we're just great to have him. It'll be interesting to have him on for the first time.
So there you have it, folks. Another great show on tap for you tonight. So as we always say, sit back, relax. Let us take your mind off everything else going on in your life for the next couple of hours.
It's time for another edition of Bob Take. So Bob, tell us, what's on your mind tonight?
All right, let's get into this week's edition of Bob's Take. And Bob, I want to start by getting your thoughts on the ratings of this year's Super Bowl. This year's game was the lowest rated Super Bowl since 1969. And Bob, I would have thought with the, you know, small number of fans that were allowed at the game and, you know, everyone staying home, so fewer Super Bowl parties, this game would have been probably one of the highest rated because more TV sets would have been on and tuned in. But it seems like it was the opposite. The audience down 10% over last year, 20% over the 2015 game between the Patriots and the Seahawks. Your thoughts on why so many fewer people watched?
It was kind of mind-boggling, Chris, because you think people are going to kind of stay home, and it's hard to picture too many households that, you know, not viewing the Super Bowl when it's on, and that doesn't matter what kind of interest you have in football. It's more than a football game, as we've talked about ad nauseum over the years. It's an event these days, but you know, they had about 20 million more viewers back about 5-6 years ago, and that's a big loss, you know. And you know, I mean, there's been, I've heard a lot of people talking about it, Chris. You know, I mean, I think, you know, the whole corona thing, I mean, it's turned people's lives upside down. I'm sure in ways it affect their viewership of television shows. To me, other sports are down a little bit too, but I think the game itself, Chris, had a lot to do with the way it was played. Now, people were going to be tuned in when you have such great quarterbacks in a game like this, and so much was on the line, the old man versus the kid, and we could go on and on about the drama involved. But the way they figure out ratings in Super Bowls, I was reading about the formula, they take the average of each minute of the contest, you know, how many people are actually watching per minute, and then they take an average. So when you have a kind of a lopsided game as that was from halftime on, obviously there was a lot of people tuning away from it. And you could understand why. It was non-competitive for the entire second half. And I'm sure if that game, Chris, was a lot like what we thought it might be, maybe an overtime game, a two-point game, a one possession to decide a game, we would have saw those numbers jump way up. But I think the answer to what you asked me, it just lies in the way it was lopsided in the second half, which affected the average, which is how ratings are figured out.
Next, Bob, I want to get your thoughts on Carson Wentz. We're sort of all on Carson Wentz watch right now. It's been speculated that he's going to be traded by the end of the week. Do you think that's the right thing for the Eagles and for Wentz? And if so, where do you think he might end up?
I think Wentz needs to get out of Philly, Chris. Again, how he's alienated some teammates, a lot of the fans, just the administration. I mean, they just say it's irreversible from what I hear from a lot of people. So, I mean, it's almost like he needs a fresh start somewhere. I think the Eagles are they thought this would happen a lot quicker than it is. The Eagles want a couple number one draft picks, because I don't think they're going to get that, but they're holding out as long as they can, and that's why it hasn't happened yet. A lot of people thought this would happen before February hit, but you know, the two teams that come to mind are two teams that are in desperate need of quarterbacks right now. When Indianapolis, when Rivers told us he wasn't coming back right away, you know, you got to think of the Colts with Frank Reich. You know, Reich has some experience with guys like Wentz. You know, Reich has had four quarterbacks in 4 years, Chris, and he's won with them. I mean, he's Frank Reich's very underrated as far as a quarterback developer. So, you know, maybe he's the guy to get him back. I think the Colts want him, It's that they have to come to some agreement with Philly. You know, we don't want to give up what you want, so let's come to some middle ground. That's where they are right now. And the other team, of course, is the Bears. You know, it's no longer Mitch Trubisky's job there. And it's a thing where Wentz, a lot of people are saying that the Bears might have an in because they may have a better deal to do or something. I mean, but they're in definite need of a quarterback. I just think it makes more sense for him to go to Indy and Reich. It seems to me like a better, I mean, it would be better for him himself. I think the Colts would be better off. So, I think he's going to get traded, and I can almost guarantee it's going to be to one of those teams.
One more, Bob, and we've got our first guest, Leon Searcy, hanging on the line. We're going to get to Leon right on the other side of this. But sticking with the quarterbacks potentially on the move, Bob, do you think Sam Darnold is going to be a Jet come next season, or do you think whichever one of these two teams, Colts, Bears, that doesn't end up with Wentz, may end up with Darnold in a trade?
That's a good point. I was just going to preface what I said, because whatever team might lose out on that Wentz sweepstakes, shall we call it, might end up with Darnold. From what we hear in the Jets camp, Chris, it's about 50-50. Even with Saleh, the new coach, in place, it's about 50-50 whether they think Darnold's the man. Some half do and half don't. So what do you do? That's a tough thing for Saleh to come into. You know, I don't know if it's going to be even his decision, man. You got to ask the offensive people. You got to ask the GMs. You got to ask the people that are in charge of getting the personnel on here. But they have been fielding calls from teams interested. You know, I mean, definitely the Bears or the Colts, whoever loses out on that. And then you have some people are saying, like, teams like Washington, you know, with Haskins having worn out his welcome. Alex Smith, you know, the way he's been. I mean, he had his comeback year that we thought, and everything, but, you know, Darnold is one of those places, you know, even the 49ers have come up. You know, is Garoppolo going to be the man? Or do you think Darnold could be a better guy with a guy like Shanahan mentoring him? A lot of possibilities, Chris, but I think the teams that we mentioned, Darnold might go if the Jets decide to let him go, but it's 50-50 right now.
All right, folks, there you have it. That's this week's edition of Bob's Take. We've got our first guest, Leon Searcy, hanging on the line. We're going to get to Leon on the other side of this real quick. Station break.
You're listening to Thursday Night Tailgate with Chris Mascaro and Bob Lazzari, where NFL legends live on. Back to you, boys.
Hear me the lot.
Now joining us and making his sixth appearance with us on the show is former Steelers and Jaguars Pro Bowl tackle Leon Searcy. Let me remind you about Leon's background. He's from Washington, D.C., played his college ball at the University of Miami, where he was a first-team All-American his senior year. He was a member of their 1987, 89, and 91 national championship team. He was elected to the University of Miami Sports Hall of Fame in 2003. He was a first-round draft pick, the number 11 selection overall by the Pittsburgh Steelers in 1992, played in the league from 92 to 2002 for the Steelers, Jags, Ravens, and Dolphins. He was named to the Pro Bowl in 1999. He's an ESPN 30 for 30 sensation, having been featured in two of their episodes. And after his playing career, he spent a few seasons as the offensive line coach at Florida International University, as well as coaching youth football and some individual players as well. He's written an autobiography titled Fourth Down and Damn, A Lineman Story. We're very excited. He is back with us again tonight here on Thursday Night Tailgate. Hey, Leon, Chris, and Bob, thanks for coming back on the show.
Hey, Leon.
How you doing, Jim? It's been a long time.
It has been a minute since we've had you on the show, Leon. Catch us up, my friend. What's going on with you?
Oh, you know, right now, you know, I made my pilgrimage back to Jacksonville, and I do a sports talk radio show, flagship station for the Jaguars, 1010XL, from 12 to 3 o'clock. It's called Lunch with Leon. I do it Monday through Friday. So I've gotten myself settled in Jacksonville. You know, I had to come back home, so to say. But I'm having a great time. You know, I've got my own cigar brand. And like you said, I've got my book, Fourth Down the Dam, A Lineman Story. It's been... you know, it was number one on Amazon's hot new releases, football autobiography. So, right now I'm setting my tour. my book tour, the tour of the country, and, you know, just tell some stories that are in the book and also stories that aren't in the book. I'm also in the works of doing the audio book next month for me and my co-author, Mike Brodsky, who helped finalize my book. So my book has been like a 10-year project, but I'm so excited of the progress that it's had.
Leon, kind of wet our listeners' whistle for some of the stories that they can look forward to, whether they read it or whether they listen to it on tape or online. How, you know, what are some of the really great stories that you can kind of tease out?
Well, you know, I always tell the great story about my draft day in 1992. I tell the story about, you know, waking up in the morning, 6 o'clock in the morning, and I couldn't sleep. And my dad was at the house and he was cooking breakfast, and we had breakfast in the morning. And then me and my father, about an hour later after we finished eating, we started walking the neighborhood to kind of remember where I came from, walked the neighborhood, you know, went to my old high school, my old middle school. It took us about 2 hours to get there. And then when we got back to the house about 9:30, you know, this was back in the day when the draft was at noon. It's not at prime time like it is now, 8 p.m., but the draft was at 12 o'clock. And we got back to the house about 9:30. We get to the house and we've got media people all in the front yard, you know, wanting to get an interview. And I was still a little bit concerned about where I was going to be drafted. I wasn't sure I was going to be a first round pick, and a lot of the media people want to ask me questions and stuff like that. So I remember walking through there saying no interviews or whatever, but there was one particular guy who was in the lawn at the particular, my dad knew because he used to come through the airport because he used to travel, the late great Stuart Scott. So my dad talked to Stuart Scott, and he said, I told Stuart Scott, you know, when I get drafted, you know, you'll be the first guy, you know, that comes to my house and interviews me. So we get there. We're at the house. It's about 10:30, and I get a phone call, and it's from Jimmy Johnson. I knew exactly who it was when I picked up the phone. He was like, Leon, how you doing? I said, I'm doing great, Coach. He said, how you feel about being a Dallas Cowboy? I said, Coach, I'm good. And typical Jimmy Johnson, he asked me, hey, Leon, you're not going to hold out, are you? I said, no, nah, Coach, if the money right, I'll be there. He said, well, you know what? We got a representative that just landed in Orlando. He'll be at your house in 30 minutes. He said, you're going to be a Dallas Cowboy. I said, okay, I'm fine with it. So I'm sitting there by 11 o'clock. The draft comes on at 12. And then a couple of picks go through or whatever. And then this guy comes in, rings the doorbell, comes in my house, big burly white guy with a cowboy hat, cowboy boots, and he's got a jersey over his shoulder. He goes in my kitchen, gets a beer, doesn't even ask for it, goes downstairs in the den. He's back there with my agent negotiating my contract. So I'm sitting there, and I'm comfortable because, you know, I think I'm going to be a Dallas Cowboy. It's about the 8th pick in the draft. I get a phone call, and it's the Pittsburgh Steelers. Bill Cowher says, Leon, he said, how you feeling? I said, I'm feeling great, Coach. He said, well, we got the 11th pick in the draft. He's going to be a Pittsburgh Steeler. And I was like, okay, I'm a little confused right now because Cowher was in my house, but the Steelers said they're going to draft me 11th pick. So 11th pick comes up, call my name. Family goes crazy, go wild. Everybody's, you know, celebrating, mom, dad hugging me, crying or whatever. So I look back. And with my agent, the Dallas Cowboy guy, tears up the contract. But he's about to walk out the den, and I see he has his Dallas Cowboy jersey. It says Searcy on the back. So I asked the guy, I said, hey, man, before you leave, you know, let me get that jersey. And he turns around to me. He says, listen here, son. He said, you're a Steeler now. He said, a cowboy never give a Steeler nothing. He walked out my house. That's one of the stories in the book. That's one of the stories in my book.
That's fantastic. So, Leon, when you join the Steelers, I mean, you're in camp and you're going to be going at practice against, you know, I mean, the Greg Lloyd and LeVon Kirkland, Chad Brown, all great friends of the show like you. But those 90 Steelers defenses were some of the best ever. Was practice harder than playing in the game on Sunday?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I can remember being on the sidelines and watching those guys play because, you know, that's what the whole premise and the concept of Blitzburg was established in the, you know, the mid-90s because, like you said, I mean, we had Greg Lloyd, we had LeVon Kirkland, we had Chad Brown, we had Kevin Green, and they brought the house. And, you know, the late, great Kevin Green, who's a brother to me, who passed away actually on my birthday, it saddened me, hurt my heart, broke my heart, because Kevin Green actually helped develop me into an offensive lineman that I was. because I had to go up against him every day in practice. And, you know, with his speed, his endurance, his physicality, his use of his hands, you know, helped me as an offensive lineman. So, because I had to go up against him every day in practice. So, it saddened me when I heard the news, because I actually heard the news from a teammate of mine, Brinson Buckner. I was actually on Facebook. I was actually celebrating my birthday, December 21st. And Brinson Buckner hit me on Facebook and said, "Hey, man, you know, Kevin Green died. He passed away. He had a heart attack. He died in his son's arms." And I shed a tear because, you know, Kevin Green was like a brother to me, because we had this long lasting friendship. He actually mentioned me, you know, during his Hall of Fame speech. So, you know, I attribute a lot of my success as an offensive lineman having to go up against him every day in practice. So it really hurt my heart when I heard that Kevin Green passed away. But, you know, those Steeler teams that I played on were some of the best times of my life as a football player.
And unfortunately, Leon, Kevin wasn't the only great player from those Steelers teams that we lost this year. Tim Lester passed away not long ago as well.
Tim Lester passed away. Yes, I was a good friend of Tim Lester as well. It saddened me to see him pass away too. You know, it's just so sad because, you know, they died so young. And, right. You know, it's always heart-wrenching when you know a guy, you know, I'm 50 years old now. And you hear guys like Kevin Green passed away, who was, what, 55? And Tim Lester was, you know, maybe 49 or 50 himself. So anytime guys, pass away so early, man, it just, you know, it puts your mortality in check and just makes you appreciate each and every day that you wake up in the morning.
Let's talk about something a little happier. Your Miami Hurricanes are back to being a pretty formidable program again. Finished 8-3 this past season. Got back inside the top 25. What are your thoughts about their head coach Manny Diaz, and what are your expectations from your Hurricanes next season?
Well, I mean, listen, the Hurricanes right now are an average football team. You know, a lot of people tell me to lower the bar because, you know, Miami can't acquire the championship pedigree that we were when I played, and I said, "The hell with that." I said, "The Alabamas do it, Ohio State's do it, the Clemsons do it." I mean, I don't want to hear about the University of Miami being back until each year in, year out, they're competing for championships, and right now they're not there. Now they're making progress. You know, 8-3 is a lot better than 6-7. You know, 6-7. I mean, you lose games to Duke, FIU and La Tech, and Manny Diaz behind was on the fryer when that happened, when they lost those games, three games in a row, and you know he did an adequate job this year, and I'm going to be hard on him because that's the house that I helped build, and right now Manny Diaz is a tenant. He's got to pay rent, and until he starts winning the way we were winning, it's always going to be suspect to what kind of job he's doing as a head coach.
Bob, questions for Leon?
Leon, it's always a pleasure to have you back and welcome back. And, I want to get back to your incorporation into the Steelers organization. You know, Tim, we had just talked about, that defense, Leon, and how good it was. And I always thought the offensive lines back then didn't get enough credit because the defenses were so good. You know, yourself, Hasselrig, Love, these guys were very, very talented players. Love had been in the league a while before he got to Pittsburgh. And these guys really went under the radar screen. But they were there when you got there in your rookie year. Did either of those two guys kind of take you under their wing and maybe some other guys in that team that made your rookie year more comfortable?
Well, I mean, I think the best thing for me is when I came in as a rookie. I came in when I signed with the Pittsburgh Steelers. I signed a 4-year deal, $4 million, $1.5 million to sign. That was my contract, and I was automatically the third highest paid offensive. I was the third highest player on the team. I remember walking in the locker room, you know, after I had signed, and I remember walking up to Tunch Ilkin, who was like a 13, 14-year pro at that particular time. He asked me, he said, "Okay, rookie, you got paid now." He said, "Now what?" He said, "You in this for the long? You in this for the short term or the long term?" I said, "I'm in this for the long term." He said, "Well, what I need you to do is do whatever I say," and that's what I did. I mean, Tunch Ilkin was my mentor, as well as Damani Dawson, Duval Love, John Jackson, Colin Hasterig. I had veteran leadership in front of me, so whatever they did professionally, you know, I followed. I followed suit. I put my ego aside. I know it was a first round pick, but I knew I wanted to be in there for the long run. So whatever they told me to do professionally, as far as weightlifting, getting up early, eating right, getting sleep, watching film, taking notes, all that kind of stuff, you know, that was entrenched in me early on, that allowed me to carry that on for an 11-year career. So, I mean, I thank those guys to this day. And when I talk to them, I thank them to this day, because I wouldn't have had the profound career that I had as an offensive lineman if I didn't have the veteran leadership in the locker room that I had with the Steelers.
And you mentioned about taking care of yourself, Leon. I always like to talk to our former players about their off-season regimens. So take me back during your career, about the first, second week of February. You're still kind of fresh off the season. What would your first few weeks be like after the season? And when would you still, when would you start working out again, and et cetera, and the rest of the way up until training camp?
Well, I was fortunate enough throughout my career that, you know, I never missed the playoffs. I made the playoffs every year that I played. So usually when, if we were, you know, usually we were, our season was over somewhere maybe early January, mid-January, or even in the Super Bowl when we played Super Bowl 30. That game was January 25th. So I usually took maybe a couple of weeks off to relax, spend some time with the family. But then I was back on the grind. I was back, you know, hitting the pavement, you know, running, conditioning, doing all the stuff, eating right. I didn't really take that much time off, because I know the NFL is so competitive, and I always gave myself a competitive edge, because I always said to myself that whoever I'm going up against that next season, I always said to myself, he's sleep, he's comfortable. So I always used to get up early in the morning, get my work, my road work in, get my heel work in, and hit the treadmill, hit the weights, and then, you know, I had a regimen of my diet. I worked my techniques and fundamentals and like that. So really, to be quite honest with you, probably like a lot of these kids today, I mean, you don't really have an off season, to be quite honest with you. Mm-hmm. I mean, at most, you might have a week off, 2 weeks off, maybe even 3 weeks off, but you're right back to work, because the NFL is so competitive, and you always want to keep that edge as a player. And the ones that last the longest are the ones that are due diligent when it comes to staying in the best possible condition that they can.
Leon, you mentioned perhaps the most painful memory. I'm a huge Steelers fan from Pittsburgh, and the most painful memory, most painful game I ever watched was Super Bowl 30. And every year around this time, we get reminded of it because they replay all the highlights from all the Super Bowl games. But 25 years later, I wanted to get your thoughts about the game, and if you ever talked to Neil O'Donnell about what happened.
No, I've never talked to Neil O'Donnell about what happened. I think that as much as those two interceptions hurt us in the game, I think also maybe the first quarter and a half hurt us just as much, because we started off slow. I mean, the Cowboys played like they had been there before, like they had been there before. And we played like we had just gotten there. And that's why it took us so long to get jump started. And before you know it, we were down 10 to nothing, going into the half. So I think if we had stuck to our game plan, which was running the ball, protecting well, play action, take your shots down the field, I think the transition of winning the game would have been a lot smoother for us if we had started the way we kind of finished. I mean, I know we finished with throwing an interception, but I mean, we had the Cowboys on their heels towards the middle of the third quarter and towards the end of the fourth quarter. But we just started too late. I think that if we had played the way we played maybe in the second half, I think the game would have been a wash, because we controlled the clock. We ran the ball. We took our shots down the field, and our defense was outstanding. We put our defense in a predicament because we gave their offense a short field with the interceptions. And, you know, when you've got we got Aikman and you've got Emmitt and you got Michael Irvin, you know, if you give them a short field, I mean, they're going to dissect you no matter what team you're playing against. So we did our defense a disservice by those two interceptions. I think if we had played a lot better offensively, it started a little faster offensively, you know, we would have never put our defense in that predicament where they had to defend a short field.
Leon, your offensive coordinator there was Ron Erhard, a guy who was an offensive coordinator and a head coach for the Patriots back in the late 70s, early 80s. But a guy we don't get to hear an awful lot about as his contribution to the Steelers and that coaching staff. Talk about what Coach Erhard did for you guys.
Well, what Coach Erhard did is he was a run-based coordinator. I remember being in the offensive coordinator room with the offensive line, with the whole offense in there. And what he essentially wanted to do is he wanted the offensive line to get their groove on, so to say. So he would give us like our top 10 plays. And out of those 10 plays, at least 7 to 8 of them were run plays. So he would always ask us what you like. Okay. We want trap. We want zone. We want counter. We want dive plays. So he always wanted his offensive line to get, because if you ask any offensive lineman, you know, he would rather run block than pass protect. So our first 10 plays were always, at least 7 to 8 of those plays were run plays to get the offensive line juices going. So it would be traps, it would be counters, it would be toss cracks, it would be dive plays, you know, so we can get after the defense. So, always respected Ron Erhard for that part, because he knew what kind of offense. We had a big physical offensive line that could run and pull and trap and all that kind of stuff. So he would always essentially give us our plays, kind of get us in the groove. He wasn't concerned about the pass play because he knew that if you ran the ball effectively, that would essentially sub the pass play and the play action. So we always be in the meeting room and ask the offensive line, what plays do we like? And we would essentially tell them, you know, what plays that we felt that would be more effective. So there were always plays that we would always be able to get after the defense with.
And obviously, Leon, you played all those years in Pittsburgh with Bill Cowher, maybe the most animated head coach ever. Your thoughts, what was it like being on the sidelines and in practice with Bill Cowher? And what's your favorite Cowher story?
Well, the one thing with Bill, I mean, when he gets going, you know, you might have to wear a raincoat around him because, you know, that the spit is flying everywhere. That's the one. But two, Coach Cowher, I love Coach Cowher. I mean, Coach Cowher is probably my second favorite coach I've ever been coached at all time. Jimmy Johnson being my first. But Bill Cowher was a player's coach. He was hard but fair, you know. He understood the morale of he was the type of coach that you will run into a brick wall for, because he was as passionate and loved the game of football as much as we did. So there's a reason why we had so much success when he was there as a head coach, because we loved playing for him, absolutely loved playing for him. And, you know, I've got a special keynote towards Coach Cowher because, you know, hell, I was his first pick ever as a head coach in 1992. So I love Bill Cowher. I loved everything about Bill Cowher.
Bob, one more for Leon before we let him go.
And I just want to say on that coaching stuff, Leon, I mean, you ended your career playing for Coughlin, quite a lot of success up here in the New York area, obviously. Kind of a more offensive type of guy, but compare and contrast him and Cowher as coaches.
Similar sort of say, both of them had a love and a passion for football. Both guys were a stickler on discipline and doing the right things. Both were a stickler on accountability. Both were a stickler on being professional. And they were both love and very passionate about the game of football. I look back at my career and I think about how blessed I was as a player to have been coached by Jimmy Johnson, Dennis Erickson, Bill Cowher, Tom Coughlin. Mm-hmm. I mean, you're talking about 3 out of 4 are going to be in the Hall. I mean, Jimmy and Bill are already in the Hall of Fame. Tom Coughlin is going to be next. So, I mean, shoot, 3 out of 4 of the coaches that coached me in my career are Hall of Famers. It don't get no better than that.
Leon, before we let you go, remind our listeners how they can listen to your radio show, get some of your cigars, and then also get your book.
Okay, well, my radio show is 1010XL. You can go to 1010XL.com. The radio show is called XL Prime Time, Lunch with Leon, from 12 to 3 o'clock. It's the flagship station of the Jacksonville Jaguars. My cigar brand is, I have my own cigar called Leon Searcy All Pro Series Cigar. You can actually get the cigar at howardgcigars.com. Also, we did a cigar for Ike Taylor, who's a two-time Super Bowl champion with the Pittsburgh Steelers. He has a cigar out called One of a Kind, so he's a part of the All Pro brand. And you can go get my book, Fourth Down and Damn, A Lineman Story, at Amazon. You can download on Kindle, or you can buy the paperback.
And Leon, how can our listeners follow you on social media as well?
On social media, you can go to Twitter. I'm on Searcy _ Leon. You can go to Instagram. I'm LL Searcy Jr. And Facebook, you can look me up at Leon Searcy Jr.
Well, Leon, we can't thank you enough for taking time out of your busy schedule to come back and be a part of the show. It's great catching up with you. We hope you'll come back and join us again soon.
I appreciate it. Don't make this the last time.
Absolutely not. Wouldn't think of it. Leon, stay safe, my friend. All the best to you and your family.
Thank you very much. You as well.
Take care.
See you, Leon. That's a great Leon Searcy, folks. Bob? A guy that was a tremendous player, and I always hate the fact that he didn't finish his career as a Steeler, and we've talked to him in the past, and it didn't really end well between he and the Steelers. I think there were some, you know, not-so-great communications that I think both sides regret now, but what a tremendous player, and what a great guy.
Got some great memories, like you said, playing for some great coaches. Man, that probably made him such a better player, and... Again, I love the name of his show, Chris, Lunch with Leon. And a guy his size, those must be very good lunches, right? So
there's a reason why there's an XL on that.
But, yeah, always a pleasure having Leon either on TV or radio. He's great.
All right, we've got our next guest, Tony Collins, hanging on the line. We're going to get to Tony on the other side of this real quick station break.
Hear NFL legends, players, coaches, and media members from around the country sharing their insights and stories with us year-round. Here on Thursday night, Tailgate.
All right, back with us now here on Thursday night, Tailgate is former Patriots Pro Bowl running back Tony Collins. Hey, Tony, how are you, my friend?
Hi, Tony.
Doing fantastic. How you doing, Chris and Bob?
We're good, Tony.
Well, Tony, you and I were both right this past Sunday, picking the Bucs. Bob picked the Chiefs at the beginning of the season, stuck with his guns all year long, and he picked them to win it. And unfortunately, I admire the loyalty, Bob. Even in the
Ran
face of
gas.
The Brady juggernaut,
yeah.
you held tight. So, Tony, not only did... were we both right in picking the Bucs? We were both right in picking the amount of points they'd score. They scored 31.
Yeah.
We were both right on that. We both thought the Chiefs would do a much better job offensively. I had them scoring 27. You had them scoring 23. Of course, they only got 9. Now, Tony, I hear Donald Trump also wagered on the game and had it closer to what my score was, and he's currently lobbying Florida's Governor DeSantis to find more points for the Chiefs. So I think we have to wait to determine who the winner is of our prognostication championship. Might be too early to tell, too early to call, because you might find some more points somewhere for the Chiefs. So I'm hoping for that, my friend.
That's too funny, man. That's too funny. You know what? I never thought I knew whenever you get into a championship game, defense always wins championships. And Tampa Bay, man, I knew Kansas City was going to be hurting with the two offensive tackles not being able to play. I never knew they would be able to shut Mahomes out. When I say shut him out, I mean, this guy did not throw a touchdown pass the whole game. And I don't know if that's been done for him forever.
Right.
You know, Brady deserves to get MVP, but that defense won that game, without a doubt.
Yeah, no, and Bob was saying that at the top of the show. So congratulations, my friend. It was close, but I'm going to go ahead and concede the title to you. But I'm not convinced, Bob. Might need a little help. I'm not convinced that Tony didn't have someone videotaping my preparation. But you know how Patriots are with videotaping stuff.
But you know what, Chris? I'm such a gentleman. I would split the championship with you, man. And you just got to make two trophies. I want my trophy.
Your trophy. Make no mistake. But you'll let me have one too.
I want my trophy. But you can have one too.
I appreciate you, Tony. That's very thoughtful of you, my friend. You are a gentleman. Good for you. Tony, I want to get your thoughts sort of on the way too early look ahead to next season because, you know, I don't know about you, Tone, but, you know, obviously the whole Brady juggernaut thing and, you know, 10 champions, you know, going to 10 Super Bowls in 20 years, 7 championships, the whole 9. But I'm not sure there's any reason to pick against them. I mean, who knows injuries and what, you know, some free agency and stuff, what happens in the offseason. But I can't imagine why you wouldn't favor them next season, at least in the NFC, to get back to another Super Bowl. I don't know. What do you think?
I mean, I would think the same thing. If they keep their team intact just like they are right now, keep those players and add more players to it, there's no doubt in my mind that they should go back. You know, because, man, you know what? You look at Brady, you know, 43 years old and doing what he did. Yeah, I mean, he played a great game. I mean, he really did. And so, but it's not just his playing ability now. It's what he brings to the team. He brings that winning attitude, something that Raymond Barry brought to New England when I was there. And so now these guys believe in him. When Brady comes back to play again next year, if they keep them same players on defense and keep that same attack that they have on offense, I don't know who can beat them. I mean, they probably won't go undefeated, but they'll be back again in the Super Bowl without a doubt. And if Brady gets the Super Bowl again, he's going to win it again. I don't care who he plays. I mean, it's crazy, but I just think that's how it's going to be.
Yeah, and I don't disagree. Bob, what are your thoughts? You know, as you look ahead to next season, I mean, again, we don't know. There's going to be some shuffling of players around in free agency. Happens all the time. We know that's going to be a factor. Taking injuries off the table because you can never predict that. But knowing as much as we can possibly know this far in advance, and again, it is the way too early predictions for 2021, but as you look into the future, your thoughts on somebody else, is it the Packers? I mean, who else you besides Tampa Bay can you envision going back to the Super Bowl from the NFC?
Well, I'm running out of years where I could say that the Packers and the Saints have got to get it together, and this might be their year. You know, you wonder, Saints, if they're going to be taking a whole new look without Breeze around. And Rodgers, you're hearing conflicting reports whether he wants to be there. And those two defenses, unlike Tampa Bay, they're always a little shaky in big games. So right now, Chris, yeah, Tampa Bay's got to be the team where you're got to say, if they keep that defense anywhere the way it is. But the NFL is all about staying healthy. Guys, I mean, as you know, Kansas City, when you look back, I mean, their two tackles were not well. I don't think Mahomes was well. I mean, you can't go into a game against a very good team like that. So it's a long season. Anything can happen. And even the Tampa Bay, I mean, for them to stay healthy all year without missing any key players in a big game, they did it this year. Next year, that's going to be very hard to do. So, again, it's exciting about the NFL now. It's a kind of a crapshoot every year now.
Tony, getting back to what you said earlier on, and it's something Bob and I talked about at the top of the show, and we've been talking about it for a long time. The old recipe back in the, you know, 50s, 60s, 70s, probably even into the 80s, the way you won championships was run the ball, play great defense. What we saw from Tampa Bay, right, Brady did well. I mean, but he only threw for just over 200 yards. So it wasn't he lit up the scoreboard. But they ran the ball well. Both Jones and Fournette had good nights. And to your point about the defense was outstanding. It just, I don't buy into, and you know from watching my Steelers, right? I mean, Ben Roethlisberger slinging it around 65 times. I don't believe that wins Super Bowls. I still believe the recipe to win is just what we saw from Tampa Bay. Good play, quarterback play. They're not turning the ball over. I'm not saying being a game manager, but good play. You don't turn the ball over. You run the ball really well, and you play good defense. That, to me, still wins championships.
I'm right with you on that, Chris, without a doubt. You know, you can get through some games during the season when you throw the ball 55 times and pull out in the end. But to win a championship, you got to have those three things. You got to be able to run the ball. And when I say run the ball, when you're running the ball, you're actually controlling the clock at the same time. And when you run the ball and control the clock, that's something that's going to take away from the other team's offense. Because now you're keeping Mahomes off the field. The best way to beat Mahomes is not for him to be on the field. And that's what they did. And even when he was on the field, the defense, that's the second thing. This is the other thing. The defense wins championships. Mahomes made some, I know you watched the game. He threw some passes where he's falling down on the ground. He's going to be falling down. And it hits the guys right in the helmet. And they drop They drop the pass. this kid is unbelievable. Kansas City will be back again. And I'm not surprised to see the same Super Bowl again if everything goes intact. Because, you know, with everything going on, with injuries and different things like that, never know what's going to happen. But if everything stays intact the way they are right now, there's no question about it in my mind, KC and Tampa Bay will be back in the Super Bowl again. I can't see no other team getting better than them that they are right now.
Yeah, and I think you're 100% right, Tony. Bob, I mean, what are your thoughts? I mean, to me, if Kansas City, you know, gets their tackles, they're obviously going to be healthy. And again, we never know training camps, what happens to people and all that sort of stuff. But you assume that the tackles are going to be healthy and back. You know, we as you pointed out at the top of the show, Pat Mahomes just had, you know, had the turf toe, just had the surgery. You assume that toe is going to heal and everything's going to be fine. Though turf toe is what took out my man Jack Lambert back in the day, but obviously that was a long time ago. But healthy, you know, those guys get healthy. I just got to imagine Tony spot on that we're looking at these two teams all over again a year from now.
You can't argue with that, Chris. Again, if they keep those offenses together, I mean, Kansas City's got to shore up the defense. As I told you before, I thought they were an average defense, and you even with a great offense, you got to have, in a big game, you're going to need those stops. And obviously the Packers and the Saints have found out that the hard way ad nauseum the last 10 years. They really have. So I know Kansas City, they're run well as far as administrative wise. So they'll fix up the defense. Spagnuolo may get a few more parts there. But yeah, you don't touch that offense. You just hope that they're healthy next season. And they will be the favorite and probably a runaway favorite.
Tony, one more before we let you go. We've got our next guest, Lee Flowers, hanging on the line. We're going to get to Lee in just a moment. But you know what it's like to get on that airplane after a Super Bowl loss and have to go back home. I just, you know, and you've talked about it in the past, but for those that haven't been a part of the show when you've talked about it, remind us, what was that plane ride like back to Boston, and what kind of reception did you guys get when you landed?
You know, it was a sad plane ride, but when we got back, you know, there's I don't know how many fans at the airport waiting for us. And just that, seeing the fans supporting us, even though we lost the game, seeing them there, it just made a big difference for us, seeing how faithful our fans were. But, you get to a game that you dream about when you're 4 years old, 5 years old, 6 years old, playing in the Super Bowl, and you get to that game. But when you dream about it, you dream that you always win. But right. When you lose, it's very disappointing. But at the same time, you got to understand, and seeing those fans come to the airport when we got home that night, it was something special for me. I don't know. I'm pretty sure it was for everybody else. But it was special for me to see them support us and be behind us the way they were. Because nobody even expected us to go to the Super Bowl at all. So it was a great ride, though.
Tony, before we let you go, remind our listeners one more time how they can stay up to date with you and then the great things you do helping kids go to college.
TonyCollinsFoundation.org. Just hit me on that and I'll get back with you.
Tony, always a huge privilege having you as part of the show, and that's no different than it's been this season and the last several that you've been a part of it week in and week out. We can't thank you enough for how much fun you make this segment every week. I'm already looking forward to next season. I may get a sliver of the trophy this year. I want the whole damn thing next year.
Hey, Chris. Hey, Bob, listen to this. Chris, I want my trophy, man.
He wants the whole thing.
I want my trophy, man. This is my trophy, man.
I'm gonna send you a trophy cut in half. I'll send you the top half.
Okay, I'll take that.
Tony, you're the best, my friend.
Guys,
stay
man.
Safe.
Absolutely.
We'll be in touch.
Take care,
Tony.
Guys.
All right. See you, Tone. That's a great Tony Collins. We've got our next guest, Lee Flowers, hanging on the line. We're going to get to Lee on the other side of this real quick station break.
Thursday Night Tailgate, where the spotlight is always on the positive. Tune in Thursday night from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time to hear your favorite NFL legends, players, and coaches sharing their stories. Now back to Chris and Bob.
I wouldn't joke about anything else that happened to you tonight.
All right, now joining us and making his TNT debut is Lee Flowers. Let me give you some background on Lee. He's from Columbia, South Carolina, played his college ball here in Atlanta at Georgia Tech from 1991 to 1994, helped them win the Aloha Bowl his freshman year. He was drafted in the fifth round in 1995 by my Pittsburgh Steelers, played in the league from 95 to 2003, mostly in Pittsburgh, spent some time in Denver in 2003. Over the course of his NFL career, he had 403 tackles. He forced 8 fumbles and had 4 interceptions, and we are very excited to have him with us tonight here on Thursday Night Tailgate. Hey, Lee, Chris and Bob here. Thanks for coming on the show.
Lee.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Ah, we're fantastic. How are you?
I'm doing great. Just glad to be alive this day and age.
Yeah, no doubt. Lee, I want to start our time with you tonight by going back to your playing days at Georgia Tech. You're a talented kid coming out of the state of South Carolina. I have to imagine there were a lot of schools trying to recruit you. How did Georgia Tech get you to go there?
I think at the end of the day, I think back then you had to make 5 choices. My 5 was Penn State, Tennessee, Alabama, Clemson, and then Georgia Tech. I took a visit to Penn State, and it's some irony behind this. So I took a visit to Penn State, and once we got off the plane, it was like 10 inches of snow. I was like, no, that's out. So then I went to, I went to a couple other schools, and Clemson really was my top choice. But at that time, Danny Ford, he left the school. So, when I got to Georgia Tech, it just was a family atmosphere. And, obviously they just won the national championship and great city. I fell in love with the city and, you can't beat the city. So, we're still here now. So, I've been in Georgia, been in Atlanta since 91. So it's just been a great place. And I love the school. I love the, I love Bobby Ross. And, I just loved all the coaches. And it just was a very friendly atmosphere, family-oriented atmosphere, and I have nothing bad to say about Georgia Tech at all.
And Lee, you mentioned Bobby Ross, and you know, your freshman year, you guys go 8-5, you win the Aloha Bowl. Bobby Ross is the coach, and then he leaves the program to go become the head coach for the Chargers. Was that hard for you? Was that disappointing, or did you see it coming?
Actually, I didn't see it coming because I think, you know, we heard the rumors. You know, anytime you win a national championship, you know, especially back then, you know, coaches were very hard to find. So anytime a coach won something that was significant as a national championship, NFL was, you know, knocking on the door. So we heard the rumors. You know, Bobby Ross told, you know, my parents and I that, you know, he was going to stay. And, you know, when we got there, we had a decent season. I was hoping that we was going to have a better season. Then he went off to San Diego. You know, I wasn't terribly disappointed, you know, because I was hoping that we was going to get a coach that, you know, after Bobby Ross left, that was going, you know, put the fire back into us. And, you know, obviously things, you know, went a different route. But, it's part of business. I mean, I think, you know, looking back on it now, I'm at 48 right now. Looking back on it now, I know it was business. You know, Bobby Ross had to do what was best for his family. But, you know, at the end of the day, you got to keep moving. You just got to keep moving. And, you know, as a student athlete, you don't have time to sit around and pout and, worry about what's going to come next. You just got to keep working out and keep your head in your books and just keep things positive and move on for the next coach.
And Lee, you played with another great friend of the show, Marco Coleman, there at Georgia Tech. What do you remember playing alongside Marco?
Whoa, I tell you. So when I got to school, well, first when I got to when I came down here to my official visit, which is Atlanta, when I came to my official visit, Marco and Willie Clay was my host, and then Marco was, you know, they were good friends, and you know, coming from high school, especially, you know, from South Carolina or Columbia. You know, you saw athletes, you know, but, you know, you didn't really see the prototypical athlete. You know, when I saw Marco Coleman, I was like, my goodness, this guy is, you know, to me at that time, he looked like he was built out of marble. And, you know, he was a workhorse. He was very professional and, you know, he helped a lot of, you know, freshman guys out because, you know, everybody had that kind of, you know, Marco was, to me, he was, you know, he was all American. You always heard about the stories about all Americans and standoffish and didn't want anybody to, you know, walk up to him and speak to him and whatnot like that. But Marco was very friendly. He was a very good guy, a very humble guy, actually. Marco and I, we're still friends today. So he was a great athlete. And, you know, I think I looked up to him. And, you know, as a athlete, you try to take bits and pieces from all other athletes that you meet in your life and just try to incorporate that into your livelihood, into your game. And Marco was one of those guys, and he still has a special place in my heart. And, you know, I think, you know, at the end of the day, Marco was just, he was just a good human being. And I think, you know, that's what we're missing more now in the NFL is just good people. You know, I think so many people are worried about their brand and worry about, their TikTok and all this other social media stuff. You know, back then, you know, you was just worrying about, you know, getting the plays called, getting the plays on the field, and, you know, just being a good person. And he was definitely that.
Bob, questions for Lee?
Yeah, Lee, it's a pleasure to speak with you. And I want to give a chance for you to give a shout out to your high school back in South Carolina, because I was looking at Spring Valley and noticed that there were six NFL players that came from there, including the Bowlwares and yourself, Willie Williams, and current wide receiver Andre Roberts came out of there. Talk about South Carolina high school football in general, Lee. I mean, we think of high school football, we think of Bama, Texas, LSU, things like that. But Columbia, that must have been a hotbed back in the time. They have some great defensive players coming out of there.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, back then it was, you know, we had so many great coaches back then. You know, our coach at the time was Coach Jerry Brown. And, You know, I played with, you know, I played with the Boatwell. Actually, I saw Michael Boatwell, you know, he was a little kid when running around the yard when I was playing with Peter Boatwell. So we had a lot of talent. You know, we had Willie Williams, and the irony behind Willie Williams, his sister is my fiance now. So it's just funny how things work out. Yeah. So, you know, but we had a great coach, and he put in the work ethic on us that, you know, you earn everything that you get. And, you know, we was probably one of the first programs at Spring Valley that had a workout regimen. You know, we go to the weight rooms on our days off, and we had a beautiful weight room. My weight room overlooked Harry Perron Stadium, and it was just a good atmosphere. But, you know, without all of that being said, you know, our school wouldn't have been that good if it wasn't for the parents or in the community. I think, you know, our school was, you know, most schools, I'm sure most high schools are in side neighborhoods, but our community was so focused on keeping the players focused, you know, going to, before games, go to a person house and eat dinner. You know, it's just very family oriented. Yeah, I know that's the theme tonight for me, but, you know, that's just who I am. But, you know, we had some great players. I mean, you know, Willie Williams, Peter Boatwell, Michael Boatwell, you know, a name that you didn't mention was, I think he was the first one from us, was Tyrone Legret. He played for Nebraska and then went to New Orleans. Right. So, you know, we had a lot of guys. And I think once we saw one guy go to the pros, it was a contagious atmosphere. And everybody was, you know, trying to do their best. You know, we always took our steps. You know, obviously you got to get to college first. You got to graduate college first. And then, you know, get to the NFL, then you got to, you know, do your due diligence in the NFL as well. But it was a contagious atmosphere, and I think our school has to be the only school in South Carolina to have that many players in, I think, what, 10-year, maybe 15-year span. And, you know, we attribute that to, you know, the community and Coach Brown. You know, we just had a great community. And, you know, the weight program, we was first, you know, team to do that. And then, you know, we had speed workouts and stuff. So we was ahead of the game before a lot of these other schools started doing it. Now you got, you know, population growing so much. Barnes High School, where I think the kid, the receiver for from Cincinnati, Green, he went to Barnes High School. So you got a lot of talent coming out of South Carolina. You know, we're being very, very underestimated right now.
And, Lee, we've had a theme over the last few weeks. We've been asking a lot of defensive players about tackling or the lack of tackling in the NFL. Now it's become a collision, contact, hitting game, and it seems like fundamentals has taken a left turn somewhere, and guys have been very critical about it as far as not wrapping up and see guys just bounce off guys and run for another 10 yards. Want to get what you see happening in the NFL, and is it ever going to get back to fundamentals?
You know what? It's so funny because I sit on the couch and, you know, we look at the football games on the weekend, and, you know, my fiance, you know, she always yelling at me like, you know, you can't control the game. And I'm like, you know, these guys are not wrapping up. They're not lowering their head. They're not, you know, I don't know. Yeah, I talked to Brinson Buck. He played for us in at Pittsburgh, and he's a coach out in Arizona now. And he said when he first got out there, a lot of these guys wasn't taught how to tackle. I mean, and that was coming from the college level. So I just don't understand, you know, what's going on with the lack of fundamentals. I mean, you look at the average yard, well, just look at the scores. Look at the scores of these games now. I mean, when we were playing a high score game for us was, you know, 15-9. That was a high scoring game. And now it's, you know, if you don't score over 25 points, you know, you're going to lose the game for 9 times out of 10. So I just think right now these guys are, you know, not focused on, you know, being physical and taking, you know, putting your will down on these players, on the offensive players and tackling and making a short tackle and wrapping up. I mean, like you just alluded to, these guys, you know, you come in and they bounce off and you give this running back all this credit. You know, think about it. You know, I think about Derrick Henry. we had about what, 5 Derrick Henrys when I was playing. You know, we had Eddie George, Corey Dillon. You know, you go down the list of big running backs, but we took them down because we knew how to tackle. And I think some of these guys are just fundamentally, and then I think they don't want to tackle. You know, we had a coach in Pittsburgh, Coach Mitch. He always said, you got to have the want to. And I never understood what that meant when he first told me that my rookie year, but the want to is you got to want to do it. If you want to do it, then you will make your mind up and you'll practice and you'll try to do it. And I just, a lot of this stuff is, you know, they're not being taught the fundamentals, and then I think they're not wanting to really get dirty. You know, these guys are you know, they're pretty boys now. You know, so you still could be pretty and take down Derrick Henry. So, you know, I think we're gonna get back to it. You know, because the yardage right now is astronomical right now. I mean, these guys are running. You know, how can you run 200 yards a game every week? And I'm talking about Derrick Henry. And it's just bananas. But I think we're gonna get back to it, and these guys understand because Tony before me said, you know, defense win championships, and you got to start winning championships.
Lee, speaking about winning championships, I mean, you get drafted in the 5th round by the Steelers in '95, a team that would ultimately go to the Super Bowl. They're coming off an AFC championship game the year before. And now you're, you know, in a defense with, you know, guys like Greg Lloyd, Lavon Kirkland, Chad Brown, Kevin Green, Rod Woodson. We could go on and on. You mentioned Willie Williams, Randy Fuller's a great friend of the show, Darren Perry back there. Talk about showing up to your first training camp and trying to make a name for yourself when you've got all those guys on defense.
Oh, I tell you what. my first training camp, I remember when I got drafted. We got drafted, and, you know, I don't know how things work now, but back then you got drafted on that first weekend, and then the next weekend you had to go to training camp. And so when I got to training camp, you know, we were a lot of the veterans weren't there, but a couple guys were there. And so, you know, I'm trying to make an impression, and, you know, and my nerves was bad and whatnot. And mind you, I played corner my whole career at, you know, from high school all the way up to college. And then when I got to Pittsburgh, they immediately switched me to safety. So then that was a learning curve for me. But once we got there, you know, I had the jitters and stuff. And Rod Woodson came in to work out. And we were working out, and he came over to me and he said, look, rookie, all you got to do is just learn the playbook and keep your head down and, ironically, learn how to tackle. And he said, you'll be fine because safeties in Steelers defense, we got the tackle. So he told me that, and I was comfortable. And, you know, obviously I didn't get my shot for probably about 3 years after that. But once he told me that, it was smooth sailing because, I think, you know, again, Pittsburgh, you know the Rooneys, they were very family-oriented. And, you know, a lot of those guys, you know, Greg Lloyd, Kevin Green, Damani Dawson, you know, they were very friendly to me, and I have nothing but love for that organization. I have nothing but love for everybody, every player that I ever met in that organization. And, you know, to speak of that, you know, talking about Alan Faneca, he just got inducted into the Hall of Fame. We were, I'm telling you, the Hall of Fame, they're going to have to make a whole new building just for the Steelers. So, it was good. I think, you know, it made me in the player that I am, that I was then, and the person that I am today. So nothing but love, nothing but love.
And Lee, correct me if I'm wrong, if I remember this correctly, but I believe Chad Scott got injured, one of the Steelers cornerbacks, and Carnell Lake was moved down to take his spot, which opened up the opportunity for you to get into the starting lineup. Is that right? And if so, how did you earn Cowher's respect to become a starter?
Well, you are absolutely right. And it's so funny because, you know, Chad Scott and I, we were desk mates. So, you know, let me give you a little breakdown. So when we were in the meeting room watching film, you had two people at the table, and Chad Scott was my table mate. So I used to tell Chad every day, I said, you know, I know, you know, I hate that you got hurt and you blew your knee out and all this stuff, but basically saved my life because that gave me an opportunity. And I think the opportunity, it rolled with Coach Cowher. I'm be honest with you, Coach Cowher and I, we're friends now. I just spoke with him a couple of days ago. But Coach Cowher didn't trust me because I was, you know, there was rumors of me going out. And I was, I was a young man. A young man from Atlanta, and, you know, I like to party, but one thing I knew how to do, I knew how to take my business on the field and take care of my business on the field. And I remember Coach Kyle calling me in the off season and saying when Chad got hurt and then they moved Cordell to corner, he said that, you know, they were going to give me a shot, and, you know, it was up to me. So that following summer, we played Tampa Bay in the, ironically, we played Tampa Bay, which was my first game. We played Tampa Bay in the Hall of Fame game. And I had 10 tackles, a sack, and that was all in three quarters. So when I came to the sideline, Coach Kyler told me, he said, you know, if you just keep doing that, you're going to earn this job. And, after that, you know, it was, you know, I was a captain for a couple of years, and, you know, Coach Kyler and I, you know, we're good friends now. So, now, I think if any young guys are listening right now, you know, always be prepared to have the opportunity. But when you get the opportunity, you better grab the bull by the horns and, you know, and break his neck. So, because you're only going to get one chance in the NFL. You only get one chance. And, you know, fortunate enough, things worked out. And, you know, here we are now.
I think Greg Lloyd is another great friend of the show, and Greg's passion for the game and tell it like it is style at such a high level. And I read an article that you credited Greg for your passion for playing the game. Talk about his influence in your relationship with him.
Well, you know, when I saw Greg, I remember when we played Cleveland Browns at home in Three Rivers. And I think that particular game, Greg had like three sacks or four sacks on Eric Zaire. Only reason I remember Eric Zaire because he was from Georgia and I went to Georgia Tech. So he had like three sacks on him, and I ran out on the field after one of the turnovers from the sack, and I bowed down to him because I was like, I never seen a person that ferocious. And I mean, Greg was just a technician. I mean, if you ever seen him rush the tackles and stuff, or rush the ends or tight ends or whatever, he knew everything that they were going to do before they did it. And, you know, he just was a ferocious guy. Now, I remember one time we were in the training room and we lost the game, and Greg was so upset that he broke the training room door. And, you know, I thought it was kind of overboard, but I was like, okay, he loves his game this much. So that's when I started realizing that, you know, these guys right here, they're not playing around. And I definitely credit that, because I felt like, you know, if you can get that kind of passion from every player on the team, 53 guys, then nothing will hold you back. And, you know, I definitely, you know, Greg lives, actually, he lives up the street. We live in Hampton, Georgia. He lives in Fayetteville. So that's, you know, next county over. But I've seen him a couple times at a grocery store, and he's still the same Greg. He's still with the deep voice, and he's still doing the karate and stuff. So, Greg was a good guy. Now, you know, I think a lot of people, you know, looking at him, you know, on camera and hearing the stories that he was a hard-nosed guy, he was, but he loved, you know, if you wore that black and gold, he loved you. And, you know, I definitely give a lot of credit to him, LeVar Kirtland, you know, all the guys, you guys, his name, Darren Pierre, Rod Woodson. I mean, played with so many guys, man. It was just very family. We were all brothers. And, Greg was just another brother that, you know, installed something in me that made my career a little bit better than what people expected it to be.
Lee, you talk about, you know, tackles, and you had a reputation for being a big hitter. I think, you know, we as Steeler fans saw that when you first came onto the team as a special teams player. You had over 100 tackles in 98. Talk about, you know, your style and how you developed your style of play.
Well, I think the biggest thing, you know, we alluded to it earlier, you have to want to. You have to want to tackle. You know, you have to want to get physical. I mean, football is a physical sport. You have to want to, you know, you're going to get, you know, making those tackles probably hurt me just as much as it hurt the opponent. But at the end of the day, I got him down on the ground, and that's why you lift weights. That's why you run. That's why you keep your body in shape so you can make those big tackles. Because, you know, at the end of the day, you know, Coach Kyle always said that, you know, you're going to have guys that's physically better than you, but you can impose your will on them, and they'll start thinking about the next game or thinking about the weather or start thinking about, oh, you know, my wife cooked a steak for me at home tonight, so let me get out of this game. And I think that's what we did. We imposed our will, and my whole thing was, you know, some guys were probably faster than me, probably bigger than me, but nobody had a bigger heart, and I wasn't scared of anything. And I think at the end of the day, you know, if it was me versus a 300-pound man, how many times are you going to allow me to keep punching you in your face? And, you know, that's the way I thought. That's the way I played. But after the game, we all could go out, have dinner, and celebrate or whatever. But between that whistle, you know, I didn't like you. I didn't want you to beat me. And that's the mentality you had to have, because if you didn't have any other mentality, as far as I'm concerned, that's how you got hurt. So I had to go out there and just stay focused and just, you know, and I love football. I love to practice. I love to get better. You know, I tell my son that all the time. He plays soccer at Georgia Southern. I say, look, man, if you're not getting better, you're getting worse. So, you know, that was my whole thing. You know, every practice, did I get better today? You know, every tackle, did I tackle this guy the right way? Did I put myself in a position to get hurt, or did I put myself in a position to hurt him? So, you know, that was just my mentality. I mean, I know it's, you know, it probably sounds kind of cool, you know, especially this day and age, but it's football. You know, it's football. We got to get back to, you know, that type of plan. And if not, then I'm telling you, before, if they don't get back to that type of plan, we're going to see a game where they score 90 points. And you see it coming already.
Bob, more for Lee.
Yeah, Lee, I think 95% of the ex-players we speak to, they're all in agreement that playing multiple sports back in their youth days helped them be a better NFL player. Was that the case with you? And you said your son is a soccer player, et cetera. Do you need that kind of well-rounded approach to be a good NFL player?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, you know, I think right now, you know, you just new age guys, they're, you know, they're doing the whole one sport thing and trying to train just for that one sport. But, you know, you still got to let a child be a child. You still have to let a kid be a kid. And a kid doesn't know what they really want to do, so you got to let them play all kind of sports. You know, when I was in high school, I played basketball my freshman year. I don't know why I keep going. My freshman year, and I was horrible. And my agent used to tell me, you like the first black guy that can't play basketball. So I'm like, well, you know, it wasn't meant for me to play basketball. So, but I ran track. You know, I was a state champion in long jump and state champion in 4x1. So you definitely got to do all sports to me. Because I think that allows you to see what sport that you really love and what you're good at. And then, you know, if you love the sport so much, then you stick with that sport. But, you know, you see these new age kids now, they get these trainers at 9 years old that, you know, going to these specialty camps in Texas and LA and these speed camps at 9 and 10 years old. And then when they get into high school, then burned out. They don't want to play football because they play in lacrosse. I mean, lacrosse is a big sport now. So, I definitely think kids need to play multiple sports, and because you never know what God has for you to play. So, I'm definitely in agreement with that. I never forced anything on my child, you know, my children. Whatever they wanted to play, I was like, look, if you're going to play this, you're going to play the whole season and you're going to give it 110%. And after that, then we'll talk about, you know, move on to the next thing.
And finally, Lee, you talked about the brotherhood in Pittsburgh and to leave the game at about the age of 30. You know, you spent 8 years in the league. That's more than the average player does. And having played in college and high school, you played the game half of your life, and then by the age of 30, you're done. I mean, how was it for you adjusting to civilian life? Was it a tough adjustment period for you?
Well, I think the biggest adjustment period, to be honest with you, and, you know, probably a lot of people going to cringe when I say this, but it's the marriage aspect, because I think, you know, your wife, I was married. I got married, probably 3 years before I retired, but I was with her the whole time. So, you know, that aspect is really hard, because she's been doing her whole thing, keeping care of the house, taking care of the house, taking care of, you know, the finances at that particular house. And then when you retire, you come home and you want that same structure that you had at whatever NFL team that you was playing for. And then, you know, it's just, it's tough. It's tough. The marriage part to me was the biggest thing that I couldn't, I couldn't handle it. It took a lot for me to get hope to that, because it was like every day that, you know, I got to see the same. Yeah, I don't want to make this. I have to see the same person every day. When I was in Pittsburgh, I got to see, you know, 52 other guys every day. You know, when I was, you know, retired, I had to see the same person every day, and it was just, oh my God, it was killing me. So I think that was the biggest thing for me. Financially, I was already pretty good with that, because I knew what I wanted to do, you know, once I stopped playing. So, but just, you know, being at home and, you know, the kids running around the house 24/7, and I had, you know, my kids was kind of, you know, they was jumping off the walls, and I was like, my goodness, you know, that was tough for me. So I think the biggest thing is just trying to get some kind of normalcy, because you never had it. You know, when, you know, people outside of football, you know, they 9-to-5 jobs, they come back home and, you know, they on the schedule. And, you know, we never had a schedule, because most, you know, I think most players back then, most players, you know, they had a home in whatever state that they played in, and then the home that where they lived at. And it was just tough on me on that part. But, you know, looking back on it now, it's probably definitely some things that, you know, I think guys could have done differently, that I could have done differently. But, you know, to me, it's just trying to get the dynamics down of being at home and being that, you know, that 24-hour, you know, father and husband and all that stuff. So, you know, that's, you know, my opinion. I probably wouldn't answer you guys looking for, I'm sure.
That's a good one. Lee, a couple more before we let you go. Obviously, we're on the heels of the Super Bowl. You had an opportunity your rookie year to go and play in the Super Bowl. As a Steeler fan, Super Bowl 30 remains my most painful memory because of what happened and how you guys lost that game. Just what your reflection, 25 years ago, has it healed, or is it still bother you? What are your thoughts?
Oh, no. I tell you, I think Tony said it best. You know, when you as a child, you always think about going to the highest game. And, you know, right now, that's the highest game. It's the Super Bowl. And you don't ever picture yourself losing. And hardest part for us, though, we were winning the game. I mean, literally, we were winning the game. Me and Dante Jones, we were standing on the sideline. You know, because, you know, you get extra money for winning the game. And, you know, we were rookies. So, you know, we were already, you know, counting our dollars about what we were going to do. And then first interception come. It was like, okay, you know, we got to overcome that. Then, you know, we came overcame that. And then the second interception came. Okay, well, you know, we done lost this game. So every year. And then, you know, how to, I think it's ESPN or NFL Network. Yeah. That week leading up to the Super Bowl, they play all the Super Bowls. And, you know, I try to find out when they're playing our Super Bowl, and I don't tune in to it, because it's very hurtful, man. I mean, I don't understand. I don't think people understand. You put in all that work, you know, all that time. I mean, you're talking about 16 games, and then, you know, I think at that time we played 2 playoff games, and, you know, you get to the biggest stage, and then you winning the game for what, two and a half quarters, maybe three quarters, and then you lose. And then you lose to Dallas. You know, so it was,
yes.
It was a hurtful moment, but you know, at the end of the day, you got to put it in perspective, man. I mean, you and I are talking right now in, you know, 2021, and there's a lot more things going on, but you know, just speaking about that Super Bowl though, it was hurtful, but you got to keep moving because you got to try to prepare for the next year and try to get back to the Super Bowl, but you never know when you're going to get back. And we never got back. I mean, the closest we came was losing lost to Tennessee, and then we lost to New England. So, I mean, yeah, we were a couple, one games away, but yeah, that was painful. And you think about it every Super Bowl time the rest of your life.
Lee, you had an opportunity to play for the Rooney family and in front of Steeler Nation, and as a member of Steeler Nation, I know how passionate we are about you guys and the team. And then we've heard an awful lot about how good the Rooney family is to play for, but wanted to get your perspective. What was it like for you playing in front of Steelers fans and playing for the Rooneys?
Oh, man, I tell you, we played a preseason game at home. And I think it was against Kansas City, actually. And it was, I've never seen anything like it. I mean, we saw, you know, when you look up into the stands, and you know, Three Rivers back then, it was just a bowl. And you saw the flags, and then they had, you know, I don't know if this was true or not, but they said they had springs in the seats because everybody was bouncing. And, you know, the whole stadium looked like it was just bouncing up and down. And it was the most amazing thing that I've ever seen in my life. And I'll never forget it. But just playing for Steeler fans, you know, it, as passionate as I am about football, Steeler fans are just as passionate. And I think that was a perfect place for me to play. At the top of the show, you guys said that, went out to Denver. And those fans versus Steeler fans is totally two different things. Pittsburgh fans, they love and die for football, and probably the greatest fans on earth, as far as I'm concerned. I know they're the greatest fans on earth because they hold you accountable. If you play bad, they're gonna tell you you played bad. If you play well, they're gonna say you could have played better. And it's the best place in the world for me and the Rooney family. It was just again, you know. My wife and I at the time got married, you know, a little courthouse wedding and whatnot. And Mr. Rooney sent us a gift. And I was like, you know, no, how did he even know? You know, but Mr. Rooney, you know, at that time, they ran Pittsburgh. So they were family, man. And, you know, I know his wife just passed away and she's with him now in heaven. So it was very family oriented, man. I'm just so thankful that I was able to go to an organization, a family organization, probably the best ran organization in all of business. And I said this one time when I was playing, you know, all these Fortune 500 companies need to take the model from the Rooneys. And I guarantee you, if they do that, you know, this world will be a better place.
Bob, one more for Lee before we let him go.
Yeah, Lee, I mean, again, we mentioned the 8-year career. We talked throughout the show how tough a game the NFL is. And, you know, without getting too personal, just want to know how your body has held up over the years. Are you still able to stay in shape? I'm sure the tackles you made and the games you played talk to you every morning.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm doing well. You know, I just turned 48 a month ago, so I'm doing pretty good. I still do, you know, I'm into the little CrossFit thing. I tell guys this all the time. You know, if you lay around the house and you sit in bed or sit on the couch all day, that's the, you know, you're gonna feel worse. So I get out and I do my little Nike apps and all this stuff. I'm not trying to plug Nike. I don't know how y'all show work, but anyway, that's what I do. And you know, I do the little CrossFit stuff, and I just got to keep moving. Because I think once you start being stationary, that's when you start realizing, oh, my knee, you know, that surgery that I had, you know, 10 years ago, my ankle, you know, my back, you know, all this other stuff. So, no, I'm good. I just ran a 5K a couple of years ago, and I'd never do that again.
Good for you, man. Good for you.
I'm doing well. I can't do that distance, but I can. I still, you know, I talk to my son all the time. I said, if you put some money, you put about a couple thousand on it, I give you a good 4 or 5 right now. But I'm gonna be in traction for the next 2 days. But I run for some money though. So, yeah, I'm doing well. I need some guys right now that's not doing well, and you know, but that's part of the game. And you know, guess what? If I could do it all over again, I'd do it again and do it 100 times harder.
Lee, catch us up. What are you doing now?
Actually, I work with a conglomerate group right now. We recycle paper boxes, actually, and we distribute paper boxes, cardboard boxes to grocery stores, you know, your Kroger's, your Target's, and then we recycle them as well. So it's been a lucrative thing. It's just, you know, something to, you know, have my kids a little good little nest egg when they get out of the house. Actually, my son just turned 21 today, so happy birthday, Lee Flowers the 4th. Yeah. So,
absolutely. Happy birthday.
Yeah. So we're doing well.
Lee, how can our listeners stay up to date with all the great things you're doing, whether that's going to follow you online or it's over social media?
My social media, you know, I think it's Lee Flowers, because it's two of us. It's Lee Flowers the 3rd, whatever the Instagram thing is. I don't know. It's Lee Flowers the 3rd on Instagram. So we have a foundation called Care for One Foundation. What we do with that is we give uniforms and shoes and equipment to schools, especially with this pandemic right now, with all the funding being cut. We try to supplement those schools with uniforms and, you know, the shoes and all this other stuff. So we're doing well. So Lee Flowers the 3rd on Instagram. So just do that. So, you know, I'm not up to that social media thing.
Well, Lee, we can't thank you enough for being generous with your time and coming and being a part of the show. We had a lot of fun. We certainly hope you'll come back and join us again sometime.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate it. You guys have a great week.
Thank you, Lee.
You do the same. Take care. Stay safe, Lee.
Bye-bye. You too.
That's the great Lee Flowers, Bob. You know, a guy that earned his way onto a great Steelers defense in 95 and then certainly left his mark. Over 100 tackles in 98 and a heck of a special teams player on top of that before making it into the starting lineup. But that was a lot of fun.
He was a terrific guest, Chris. Can't wait to have him on again. I mean, he's got to love those guys, again, that play for one team their entire career. Very humble man. Seems like he's very grounded. That was a lot of fun with him. And, of course, you know, he shares the same attitude as a lot of these other guys about the tackling. Isn't it amazing? It's right down the line. Any guy that's been playing in the 90s, it's a whole different game now. Guys don't tackle anymore. It's hitting now.
Yeah. And, you know, we've sort of lamented that, right, for the last several weeks, you know, between the shoulder tackles and the guys that are just sort of shy away from tackles anymore. It's just not the same. And, you know, to what, you know, you talk with Lee about and what we've talked with some of our other guests about, you know, wrap up, right? That's the frustrating thing is, to me, is to see a guy go in and try to lay the boom with a shoulder. And like you pointed out, you know, the runner bounces off and either gets another, you know, 10 yards of yards after catch or just, you know, 10 more rushing yards. And you might have had the, you know, the opportunity to stop him short of a first down. And the next thing you know, they bounce off and they get the first down. Boy, as a fan, that drives me nuts. I'm sure it drives coaches nuts. But the thing you got to wonder is, where are these guys learning this thing? Why are they not being taught properly? And why are they not held accountable? Like Lee said, you got to hold people accountable. Why are you not holding them accountable to make those tackles?
Yeah, it's really really amazing, and to hear guys that are passionate like him and learn the right way, hoping that it might return to that way. But it's, again, guys throwing bodies around, hoping that the force will take down running backs. It's nothing to do with tackling anymore.
All right. When Bob and I come back, we'll be turning on our Thursday night tailgate spotlight on the positive. Here are two more great stories about guys out there making a big impact in their communities. We'll do it right on the other side of this real quick station break.
Thursday night tailgate, where the spotlight is always on the positive. Tune in Thursday night from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time to hear your favorite NFL legends, players, and coaches sharing their stories. Now back to Chris and Bob.
I wouldn't joke about anything else that happened to you tonight.
All right, we are back here on Thursday night tailgate, and we're turning on our spotlight on the positive. Bob, who are you putting your spotlight on this week?
I'm going to honor this week, Chris. It's a very interesting story. It's defensive back Pierre Desir. I mean, this is a guy that started the season with the Jets this past season and then was picked up by Baltimore toward the end of the year, Chris. And you know, his story is fascinating because he was born in Haiti and has been around. He's been the ultimate journeyman, if you will, in the NFL. I think he's played for five or six teams, including the Browns, Chargers, Colts, Jets, I think Ravens. I mean, he's been around. Has really had, you know, he's only played really one full season and played very well with Indy back in 2018. So, I mean, but he's been around. But when he came to New York, Chris, he went right to the community relations department and asked the Jets, what can I do to help this community? I mean, that's the first thing he did when he arrived in New York. And so that tells you what kind of dedication guy has, and through that he's always been involved with an organization called Samaritan's Feet, and it's about, you know, it's an organization that distributes pairs of shoes throughout school systems, Chris, and to boys and girls clubs, and shoes and socks, and he's very into that, and he, you know, there's these organizations that do that, base other things around it, as far as, you know, being kind and anti-bullying, but it all starts with the shoes and socks being distributed to needy people. And one of his quotes, and I was reading his article, and he tries to keep it in his family. He says, the most important thing for me is to try to show my kids how important it is to give back. My kids can be doctors, they can be teachers, they can be whatever they want, but I want them to be good people. It doesn't take much to be a good person. So that comes from Pierre Desir. I mean, again, it's a great story, Chris. He became a father at a very young man, but he's picked it up since then. And he's a guy that's really, really, wherever he's been, and he's been, now he's in Baltimore, but he's going to be very, very committed to this Samaritan's Feet wherever he goes. And so, I mean, it's a great organization. Again, go to NFL.com. And you'll actually see him. They have a video of him, Chris, under the Walter Payton Man of the Year section. They have a video of him on a Zoom with kids, and him talking about how important it is to give back. And on this Zoom that they play, he actually gives $1,000 scholarship to everyone that was watching the Zoom. So wow. It'll bring tears to your eyes. But yeah, Pierre Desir, who's now with the Ravens, Chris, he gets the nod this week.
Yeah, absolutely. What a great story. I love that. Two things, right? First thing you do when you go to New York is how can I help? And then to put that Zoom call together and give everyone on it $1,000 scholarship. That's fantastic stuff, Bob.
Great stuff.
Thank you for sharing that story. I'm going to, you know, cross sports and jump over to basketball tonight, Bob, and I'm going to put my spotlight on Vince Carter. Vince is officially launching the Vince Carter Scholarship and Mentorship Program up in Toronto. His program is going to provide scholarships in the amount of $25,000 per student. Now, his program is primarily targeting high school students who have a passion for sports, music, film, fashion, broadcasting, media, science, technology, engineering, or math. So, first of all, kudos for that. The scholarship recipients are going to be able to attend top caliber private schools with several unique academic programs geared to helping gifted students become all they can be. For the program launch, the first high school to participate is going to be Jay Addison High School up in Markham. And there are auxiliary programs that they're establishing for younger students, and those students are aged 12 to 15. And they're going to include summer camps for kids interested, again, in those areas we mentioned above, sports, fashion, film, music, leadership, those sorts of things. Scholarships are going to be available to students around the world that want to come there. And they're going to be entering, those students have to be entering their junior or senior years this coming September and each year then going forward. Key program components are going to be including specialized academic courses and internships specifically for these kids. Plus, they're going to be giving them work experience, including shadowing corporate board executives. Scholarship program is going to be geared, Bob, to help in the greater Toronto area. Plus, their post-secondary students that are going to be willing to attend York University, Seneca College, or Ryerson University. So those three schools are going to be the target places that he gives out those $25,000 scholarships. So, Bob, kudos to Vince Carter for the effort to provide scholarships and opportunities to kids who need the financial help. And then, just for him, promoting education. That's so important. I know how important education is to you, Bob. You talk about it a lot with our guests. Certainly one of the most important, if not the most important thing that these guys do is, the education that they give and then also giving back to the community, just like in the story that you said about Pierre Desir. But kudos to Vince Carter, Bob. I just think it's a tremendous thing he's doing.
Tremendous story, Chris. And Carter, we think of Carter, we think of longevity in the NBA. Played forever, decades. And it's so refreshing to see a guy that to reap the benefits of the NBA who's giving it all back to a worthy place like he is. And that you only can have a smile on your face when you think of how many people he's helping and will continue to do so. Maybe staying around as long as he did. His name is out there and will ever forever be out there. So kudos to him. He's doing great things and will continue to do so.
Yeah, absolutely. So two more great stories, folks. There you have our spotlight on the positive. It is time for Bob and I to put a bow on this episode of Thursday Night Tailgate, folks. We want to send out our sincere thanks again to Leon Searcy, Tony Collins, and Lee Flowers for joining us tonight. And Bob, as always, thank you so much for sharing your Thursday nights with me, my friend.
That was a great show, Chris. And again, to have a new guy like Lee join us, that was a lot of fun. And let's do it again next week.
Absolutely. All right, scheduled to join us next week is our good friend and former LSU and Chicago Bears wide receiver Wendell Davis is going to be back, as will former Major League infielder Kurt Bavakwa. Always some great stories and some passion from Kurt, so looking forward to catching up with him. Another great friend of the show, former Steelers defensive back Randy Fuller is going to be back with us. Plus another newcomer next week, former 49ers, Vikings, and Rams running back Amp Lee. He'll make his TNT debut with us. Looking forward to that. So really fun show next week, folks. We hope you'll come back and join us and be a part of it. On social media, you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at CT Mascaro. Bob is at Bob_Lazzari, and the show is at TNT Podcast. Please check us out on Facebook. Both Bob and I have our own Facebook pages. Plus, we've got one for the show. Give us a like over there on Thursday Night Tailgate. We'd really appreciate it. Plus, check out our website, ThursdayNightTailgate.com. You're going to be able to see what our upcoming guest schedule looks like. Plus, we've got links back to our page over on Podbean. So you can stream or download the show. Download the Podbean app. You can take us with you everywhere you go. If you've got another favorite podcasting app, well, guess what? We're probably on it. We're on Apple Podcasts, Radio.com. TuneInPlayer.fm. We are all over the net. And folks, please do us a favor. Go online to podcastmagazine.com and vote for the show in their Hot 50 list to get the show on the charts. And we certainly really appreciate your support. You can go on there when you vote for a podcast. You can actually vote for three. So some of the other great shows that are worth considering that we would appreciate you voting for, our show over on the golf side, Next on the Tee, plus our good friend Gus Farad and his podcast, Huddle Up with Gus. Another great friend, Mitch Lawrence, has a great golf show. It's called Talking Golf Getaways. Jason Fearman and the guys over there on Third and Three podcast, Lock on Patriots with Mike Diabetti, and then our good friends, Flieger and Briggs. They've got a great podcast called Chaos and Disorder. Bob, take us home, my friend.
Okay, Chris. Look forward to next week, and you have a great week. And we also want to thank our great announcer, Joe Lajanusa. for the wonderful job he always does with our intro and ads. We also want to thank Kyle Turley and the Kyle Turley Band for the upcoming outro music. On behalf of myself and Chris, we want to thank all the fans out there tonight for listening. We appreciate you the most. Until next week, good night, Kevin. Good night, Terry. And good night, Rusty. We miss you guys.